We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
So the piece is up, and I have tweeted it out, and they can read it at DailyNetFeed.com. Deals with a whole bunch of stuff. Before I get to any of that, though, our friend Dan Wojcicki, who's now with the LA Times. Or do you know him?
Yep.
You know Dan? Yeah.
I do.
So he called me and asked me about the Grizz Clippers rivalry. And I have the unfortunate problem that I don't remember anything. Like, I can't, I didn't even know they only played twice in the playoffs. He said, why was it such a great rivalry? I said, well, all those years in the playoffs. And he said, well, they played twice.
Right.
And the real question was, is there a rivalry now? And what made that rivalry so great? And is there anything now? Do you think there's any remnant of it now?
Not to rain on Dan's story, whatever he's writing, but it ended last year. I mean, it ended 2 years ago, yes. Basically. Last year was when Chris Paul and Blake Griffin were gone. And Zach Randolph was gone. So once Zach Randolph and Tony Allen are gone and Chris Paul and Blake Griffin are gone, like, that's the end of it, right?
Does it mean anything? Is there any residual Clipper hate or
not? I don't think so, no. I think last year was sort of the ceremonial end, and this year is just another team coming into town to me.
I think there's nothing. Right. He made an interesting point that, in a way, the Clippers have become the Grizzlies.
Right. No, that is a good angle where they are,
yes.
And they're even, like, throwing out, like, grit and all this.
Right.
And I've even heard, like, Chris Vernon lament, like, he likes all these players who play for the Clippers, right? Because he said this man crush on Pat Beverly for 10 years.
Right.
You know, he likes guys who you think, you know, beat up somebody in a dark alley or whatever.
I mean,
instead of playing basketball. But yeah, and Pat Beverly and Montrezl Harrell and, you know, Avery Bradley sort of has a defensive
reputation. Tobias Harris, and then, and yeah, how do you like, I mean, Danilo's been hurt and he's talented. I don't root against him. Do you root against Danilo?
No, but he's not like,
he's not a tough guy.
He's not gritty, grindy.
No, but he's a sympathetic story.
But
I
the
still
rookie,
think.
Yeah. Shai Alexander, is sort of an unflashy, plays defense kind of point guard. And yeah, no, the Clippers have been, and I was going to do a thing in the game day store yesterday. I'd taken a bunch of notes about it, and then practice ran like an hour late, and I needed to get it done, so I didn't have time to write it. But I sort of said on the radio a few yesterday, the whole Western Conference Marco Polo thing,
yeah.
Right? I was going to do a whole riff on that in the game day, and the Clippers are the exception to that. The Clippers have not been up and down. They've just been up for the most part.
You pointed out today they started 4-4, and then they've been 12-4 since.
And so they started 4-4, but they have not had a three-game losing streak all season. They haven't had the, like, lose 3-4 games or lose 4-5 or any of that. Like, they haven't had the downward dip. Every other team pretty much in the West has had the up, they bobbed up, and they've dipped down at some point in the season. Really all of them, I think, except for the Clippers. I think Clippers may be the only one who haven't had, you know, both of those. They've just mostly been up all year.
You look at – I want to get back to the rivalry just a minute to it because I would talk just a little bit. It looks like mediocrity. I mean, you look at that roster,
yes.
It just looks like total mediocrity.
It looks
mediocrity.
Like a 35-win team on paper. I don't know if they're going to keep up. Like, I still don't. I'm still skeptical about the Clippers keeping up this pace, partly because, you know, they've had this great year from Gallinari, who you mentioned, who has a pretty severe injury history. I just don't expect him to have the best and healthiest season of his career now. It could happen. You never know.
Right.
But I don't expect that to continue. And, you know, Patrick Beverley has got a lot of injury history, too. I feel like this team is playing above its head, but sometimes teams just keep doing this. You never know. Like, there was that Suns team a few years ago that was supposed to be terrible. They ended up missing the playoffs, but they won, like, 40, 42 games or whatever. They're supposed to win, like, 20.
Right.
And sometimes things just click for teams. I mean, from the outside perspective, the Grizzlies look like one of those, right?
You wondered if the – yes. Although at least the Grizzlies, you can point to Mark and Mike, who have a pedigree.
Healthy, right?
You know, what's the pedigree of Danilo Gallinari?
This is why I picked the Grizzlies ahead of the Clippers. Even though I had both missing the playoffs, I had the Grizzlies ahead of the Clippers going into the season for that very reason.
Yeah.
I could see it, Mark and Mike healthy, hey, this team was going to be okay. The Clippers, I couldn't see them being more than like the 35-win team.
Just to revisit the rivalry briefly, they were just 2 years in the playoffs, and basically – each one, in a way, was a gut punch to the other team. Because the first year, the Grizzlies, that was the game one. they lost the huge lead, the 26-point lead or whatever it was. And then game seven was a game seven at home, whatever. And
Mother's Day was like a noon tip or whatever. That was the worst basketball game to watch I have ever seen in person, I think. It was a game seven at home.
Right.
And it was just talking about being in the mud. Like the whole building felt like it was in the mud. It was terrible.
I think Vernon was mad that Hamed started the fourth quarter.
Hamed and Arenas. That was a notorious thing. Like, how do you start fourth quarter of a game seven with Gilbert Arenas and Hamed Adadi? To which the answer is, like, you can't play Mark and Mike 48 minutes and, like, this is who you got, right? That was sort of the problem. But that game one was just like, yeah, I mean, the game one of that series was almost like some kind of fever dream or something. Like, didn't seem real what happened in the fourth quarter. And then the game seven was just
so deflating.
The whole thing was terrible.
That was terrible. But then the next year, the Grizzlies go down 0-2.
From a Memphis perspective, it took the form of an exorcism.
Yeah, it was an exorcism.
Yeah.
They're down 0-2. And I think one of the single greatest, was it game six? They beat him in six, and that was a Zebo had Blake Griffin on the floor.
I think maybe the best,
that trick.
Still the best thing I've ever written about the Grizzlies was probably my game story from game six, which was, if you look at the timestamp, it was 2:45 in the morning. and my headline, which I stole from a Hold Steady song, was How a Resurrection Really Feels. And it was, the whole thing was just total chaos. It was, you know, that was the game where Zach hits the floor and Tony runs not to help him up, but to stand over him and flex his arms. You know, it was the game where I think Chris Paul got thrown out, and then Matt Barnes thought he got thrown out.
He kicked the garbage can. Was that with that one, or is no? Matt Barnes
was with the Clippers.
Yeah, right.
And he assumed he got thrown out because he's Matt Barnes. And, and so he starts arguing that it was Chris Paul who got thrown out.
Oh, I see.
And then Zach gets thrown out. And as Zach is leaving the arena, he whips off the headband. Yeah. And Tony's like pounding his chest. And the whole thing. It was total chaos.
It was the most Grizzlies game ever. I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
that's right.
It is the most Grizzlies. And Whoop That Trick is playing. And it just was insane.
And somewhere in all there, and I don't think it was that game, but somewhere in all there, there was the classic, like, Zach Randolph on the floor basically choking Blake Griffin.
I think that was game six, too.
I think
that was that game, too. Who was more reviled, Blake Griffin or Chris Paul?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a close call. I felt like there was more attention on Blake Griffin because you had – it was the Randolph-Griffin one-on-one matchup had so much heat. There's no heat with Mike Conley and anybody, really.
Right.
And so you had the whole Griffin. But Chris Paul, the most villainous Chris Paul thing was, remember Marc Gasol had the torn abdominal muscle, supposed to be out like 2 months. He missed two games. And Chris Paul ran over and shivved him in the ribs on the free throw line. I think that's how he got thrown out.
God, that was fun.
Yeah, and then you had the one regular season moment that fit into the whole thing was the one where Tony Allen kicked Chris Paul in the face.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a road game.
See, I should have had Dan call you. I can't remember any of this stuff.
It was the road game, and it happened to be the same night as a Justin Timberlake concert in FedEx Forum.
That's fantastic.
So I remember like going up, like in the middle of the show, getting bored and walking up, and like people were watching it on the screens, you know. The concourse.
The first series was Rudy Gay was healthy and was not good. I think that's true. And the second series was Rudy Gay was gone.
The first series is the only playoff series Rudy Gay ever played for the Grizzlies.
Yeah.
And Zach Randolph had gotten injured at the beginning of the season. He had come back, but
was not
limited.
Himself, right.
And so Rudy was the alpha. He was the de facto go-to guy. And
it was very awkward. Yes.
He was forcing a lot of shots and not making them. And he was a guy, quote unquote, guarding Nick Young, when Nick Young hit three threes in like the span of a minute in that fourth quarter comeback.
Yeah. This was all fun, and now it's just uniforms. And I don't think Doc is reviled, do you?
No. I think people generally like Doc Rivers as sort of a personality, and he was never really the identity of those Clippers teams from a fan perspective.
Right.
I don't think
it was Blake.
The other thing is that first year, that Clippers team, we talk about them being gritty, grindy now. That first year when they beat the Grizzlies, their bench was like Kenyon Martin and Eric Bledsoe and like
they
some
had
really
another, they had another big dude.
Reggie Evans.
Yeah.
They had like cornered the tough guys off the bench, and Bledsoe just
and Reggie
gave,
Evans was
gave
murder for
fits.
Him too. And Reggie Evans was getting rebounds. Yeah.
Right.
No. Yeah, that was a heck of a lot of fun. I will be giving away, we have actually now two pairs of tickets to the Clippers game tonight that we'll give away at the end of this segment. Joakim Noah is in town. You saw him, you set eyes on him, you talked to him?
Yeah, I mean, he was very soft. It was like he'd take gone to the Crash Davis school of like interview technique from Bull Durham, where he, you know, Crash explains to Nuke LaLoosh, these are the cliches you have to use, right, so you don't give people anything. And it was a total Crash Davis.
It's funny because he was such a personality.
He was totally. I'm just blessed. I'm just happy to be here. Just want to be one of the guys. You know, he didn't say much of anything. He did sort of say, and it was sort of subtle, he said, and I used it in what I wrote, he said, you know, I want to be a good influence.
Right.
And obviously that's not a reference to Marc Gasol. That's a reference, you know. And so I think it's interesting, the idea that Jaren Jackson Jr., as a rookie, is going to have Marc Gasol and Joakim Noah, like, in practice with him, like two former defensive players of the year as big men, which I think is cool. You know, he looked, people ask me, like, what kind of shape he's in. I'm like, how do I know? I can tell you that he looked totally ripped in the upper body.
Right.
More so than Mark did. Like, he'd clearly spent a lot of time in the weight room.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's different from basketball shape, right? And so I don't know about that. J.B. Bickerstaff said, you know, he looked good. He looked like he was in good shape. Basketball shape is a work in progress. He made sort of that distinction. And it sounds like, I mean, he's on the team, so they can play him tonight. But Bickerstaff sort of sounded like he was reluctant to do that. I bet he's on the active roster, though.
You think he will not play tonight?
Well, my guess is he's on the active roster, and there is not a definite plan to play him. That maybe depends on how the game goes. That's the sense I have.
Right. Okay. You also went through his history a little bit. He's just not played much lately, right? I mean, he was last year with the Bulls, he was hurt.
The last three seasons, two with the Knicks, one with the Bulls. The one with the Bulls, he played, I think, 30 games, and it was a shoulder injury that cost him most of the season. The past 2 years with the Knicks, it's been a whole list of stuff. There was a knee injury. There was a rotator cuff injury. There was a 20-game league suspension for testing positive for PEDs. And then he got in an argument with Jeff Hornacek, and they sent him away. Put him in exile. And so over 2 years, he had all four of those things happen. And so he played like 50 games the first year with the Knicks. He played like six last year before they sent him away.
And has he been totally healthy? Anyone could have picked him up at any time, and he just didn't? Like, why hasn't anyone added to their roster before
now?
Well,
I mean, I don't know about totally healthy, because he has this now 3-year history of pretty significant injuries, right? And so one thing he did say that I didn't end up writing, because it felt a little bit too much of an aside, but one of the questions I'd gotten was like, why didn't they do this 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, or why not 2 weeks from now? Like, what's the deal with the timing, right? Because it's been out there for so long. And someone from the Grizzlies had told me a few weeks ago, because I had asked, like, why hasn't this happened yet? And they said, oh, he's got some stuff he's trying to take care of. It made it sound like it was sort of on his end. He wasn't ready to sign with the team yet. And he basically said that yesterday. He said, you know, I had some personal stuff I had to take care of, and I was able to take care of. What that means, I have no idea.
Right.
But it sounded like he was not, it wasn't a physical thing. It was he was not ready to sign a contract.
You just had to deal
until
with some
now.
Stuff.
Right.
Right. I gotcha.
And so, you know, here we are. And my feeling is sort of that if he is healthy enough to be effective, he's a pretty good fit as a, you know, backup center on this team, because he is similar to Marc Gasol in a lot of ways. Now, he can't shoot or score like Mark, and that's a problem for a team that has a problem on offense.
Right.
But he's similar defensively, both in terms of how he plays, his IQ level, and how he plays physically on the floor. And he is like Mark in that he is used to handling the ball and passing the ball, you know, taking the dribble handoffs and passing out of the high post and sort of playing at that spot on the floor. So you could see him playing with Jaren Jackson, like, easily. The problem is that he can't shoot. And so the guy doesn't have to guard him the way they have to guard Marc Gasol out on the floor. But in terms of the high-low feeds and you know, setting the pick for Mike Conley and, like, facilitating out of the elbow, he plays very similarly to Gasol. And I feel like, and J.B. Bickerstaff, when I asked him, he agreed with my assessment, essentially, that it makes him a pretty easy fit if he is physically able to contribute.
The last thing I want to ask you about is that – we know what I've known what the issues are with the Grizzlies, to the extent that they have issues, the wearing down of Mark and Mike, the scoring from other place pieces, et cetera. You pointed out in your piece today, and I urge people to read it over at the Daily Memphian, that the defense has gone from elite to mediocre.
Average over these last five games. And so if you look at like this 1-4 stretch, like, and isolate that from what had come before. And what had come before is they were top five defense, and then over these last five games, they're like number 16th or whatever. And there are two main reasons for that. One is the turnover stuff, which was such a strength earlier in the season, has disappeared over these last five games. The other thing is their defense against three-point shooting has gone from average to bad, to really bad over the last four or five games. And so the question is, like, was the early season stuff a mirage? Is this like a little dip and they'll come back? You know, someone asked me in the mailbag early in the season, you know, the Grizzlies are a top-five defense. Is that sustainable? And I said, no, but they're probably a top-10 defense. And I still sort of feel that way, that they'll settle somewhere in between those two. Part of it is the opponents. Like, these last five games, they played Toronto, which is the best team in the league, probably. Philadelphia, now that they've got Jimmy Butler back, maybe one of the two or three best teams in the league. The Clippers have been, I don't know if they're sustainable, but they've been that good, right? And so they played a very high level of opponent, but they're not going to stop playing high-level opponents, right?
Right.
And so I think they have got to be better defensively than they've been these last five or six games. My concern would be that some of what you saw early on was a little fluky. Like the extent of the turnover differential they were able to generate early in the season, that if that sort of poof disappears the way it has the last four or five games, then that's going to be a problem for the Grizzlies.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.